This is a No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chat.
With guest, Daphne Lee Martin.
I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com.
Beer sponsor for this tour. It's a local brewery. They Cottrell Brewing has been up in like Pawcatuck, which is maybe 20 minutes east, closer to the Rhode Island border, from where I am. The folks that used to own the restaurant and cheese shop and wine store cellar kind of place that I used to work for, they decided to do their own line of beers through this brewing company, and they're awesome. We've been serving them at the Hygienic, the art park, you know, the live performance space and everything. They've been really, really cool. Ever since I even stopped working for them, they've kept being really supportive of the music and art scene, even though they're more restaurant and, you know, food kind of oriented. But it's been amazing, and I had seen, like, Ross and the Rice Cakes from Providence and a few other bands like that have been sponsored by Narragansett, and I was like, why don't we put our marketing heads together? You know, I know you guys, and I love what you do. You're class act. And they are the very exacting. They were as bosses, too. They want everything right, and I really just dig their style. So we got our heads together and put together a really bunch of cool graphics, and did, you know, they're sending out t-shirts and swag to the bars along the way. And so we're doing this hashtag, where's your safe harbor? Safe harbor beer. Okay.
You can really use one of those.
I know,
not the beer,
right?
Just a safe harbor.
This is a safe harbor. And it, you know, sort of based around the idea that it's a Navy town. Right. Where's your safe harbor? We build a lot of submarines and the sub base across the river from the town. So, so that's been pretty fun. And I guess they have distribution here in Ohio, so they're sending a bunch of swag to anybody that posts a selfie with me tonight. We'll, like, get a package in the mail of, like, swag. So it's
nice.
Kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I just miss out because I don't have an Instagram account. I'll survive.
No, it's all good. I think Twitter works, too.
Yeah.
And they're stalking my Twitter, which is awesome. I got a text from Fred earlier. He's
we're
watching closely your whole tour. We're so excited and proud of you. I'm like, yes. I can't tell you how much it means to me to, like, you work so hard, you know, and it's thankless and it's stupid and you end up losing money and it's hard and everything about it is designed to make you not want to do it anymore. You know what I mean? And then there's, like, the few people that persevere regardless of their talent.
Believe me, writing is the same way.
Yeah, regardless of their talent, there's only some people that will put up with that shit long enough to, you know, to make it. And I'm hoping now that to have somebody that isn't even in my field look at me and be like, I'm putting my money on her. Like, that, man, I can't tell you how much motivation that gives. It's incredible.
If I had any money, I'd put some on you. I just,
you do have money. You have your voice. You have your listenership, your leadership.
Yeah, they don't pay me.
I know they don't pay me.
Yeah, they should. Everybody should just give me a dollar.
I've been exploring the idea of what is a commodity lately. I've been, like, when I'm driving for a long time and just letting my brain kind of swirl, I've been trying to think about how did music become free, and how did people stop assigning value to ethereal things that they used to assign value to? Why is that a thing? I haven't solved any of it yet, but my brain is cooking. And music, you know, it's like, it's so valuable and people use it all the time, but no one wants to pay for it.
Well,
and
my theory on this subject,
writing, you know, there's so much writing in the world that no one wants to pay for it. The good stuff.
And I think it's very much an issue of technology. And I think that when you get right down to it, what people have always been paying for, they didn't necessarily do it, but what they were always paying for was the format. They were paying for the book that has stuff written on the paper. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
They were paying for a CD, physical object that they put
into. Which is why my record store is actually working.
Right, and that's, well, I think that's one of the reasons why vinyl is still so popular, because it's something you can hold in your hand. It's something that you actually have to touch, and you can interact with it in a way that you just can't with an MP3 or whatever. And it makes it so that when people can just download music and stuff, they don't feel that they're actually getting anything. even though they are. They're getting the music that they love, but they're not...
stream it. And
right.
Then they don't even... It's not even a copy of it. It isn't even a digital file. It's just in the air, coming
right.
through the waves, you know?
Right, yeah. And so I think that we as artists have to find a way to do, and it's going to be tough, but it's convince people that the art itself actually has some value. And I think the music, you know, people do that by going out and playing and touching people directly with their music and by meeting them and by, like, oh, now I actually know this girl, Daphne, like, I want to support her, I'll buy a shirt or I'll buy a CD or I'll buy a record, just because, like, it was the experience, and it's, like, almost a souvenir more than it is, like, the actual music.
Right.
Because they could get that. They want to. I mean, it's not like there's a torrent out there probably of your newest record yet, but, you know, if they want to, they can find a way to get your music. But it just sort of, you know, grows from there when you actually make contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard when you're a writer. Because, like, I mean, I was talking about, you know, the possibility of just doing a nonstop book tour kind of thing. Like, that's really the only chance you ever have as a writer of meeting people and interacting with them.
Because it's a more isolated form. It's not performance art.
Right.
You're actually creating one static piece of art that you're then propagating
right.
out to everyone. Yeah.
Right. I mean, and even like what I do, you know, which is, it's a step removed from art in a lot of ways because it is, it's criticism and it's features, whatever it is, about other people's work. But I always try and do it as art. When I write a review, I want it to be able to stand alone as a good piece of writing, you know? And it's amazing to me that a lot of my biggest fans are musicians, whether I write about them or not, because I think they just appreciate that.
Well, like, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, obviously, as musicians, we send our records out to get reviewed to tons and tons and tons of people. And even working with a publicist this time around, it's incredible to see that a lot of them will literally still, good magazines, name magazines, name blogs, will still just copy and paste your one sheet text and regurgitate it as if it was their own original writing.
Right.
And it's like, well, thank God I at least wrote a good one sheet because these people aren't actually listening to the album, they aren't actually reviewing it, they aren't, you know, they aren't saying how they feel about it, or I'm getting no feedback, I'm getting no sense of what I've accomplished with this record, because it's really nice that they're helping me spread the word, but I don't know how it has impacted them,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So that's, it's been interesting to see that, and so I think that's what you're talking about with artists really appreciating the fact that you've listened to that record, you put your heart in it, and if you took the time out of your life to write about it for free, often, you know, that's huge.
Way too often.
That's huge. That means the world to us, you know? It's...
Well, you do what you can. So anyway, we've actually been recording for a while here,
I noticed that.
And I'm
going to
totally use that. But I should mention, just for the folks who are listening, that this is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chat. And joining me here, talking about arts and other esoteric stuff, is one of my favoriteest people in the whole wide world, and a pretty damn amazing musician, that is Ms. Daphne Lee Martin.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening to No Surf.
Yes, indeed. And Daphne is here in Columbus tonight. And where the hell are we?
We are at Bossy Girls Pinup Joint.
Yeah. So we got a nice table full of naked ladies in front of us here, which is going to make this a fun interview. And this is a pretty cool place. If you get the chance to check it out, I highly recommend it. You just had a damn good sandwich, too, so recommend
right
that. So anyway, Daphne is here on, what are you calling this tour? Because you always come up with good names.
Yeah, it's called the Afterglow Tour.
Uh-huh. Mm.
There's a few jokes relevant to the tour, which we will sort of reveal as we go along, but there's a few things, personal things about Frank and I's lives. So I'm touring, for those of you who do not know much about the tour yet and are listening to the podcast, I'm touring with a songwriter from Asbury Park, New Jersey, named Francis Lombardi, or Frank, or Frankie, or any number of other, you know, creative...
He'll answer to pretty much anything.
Creative nicknames, I'm
Lombo.
Sure. In any case, he's a fantastic songwriter, and we have been doing a lot of duo material and that sort of thing before, but, you know, our personal stories are obviously going to get woven into the stage banter and all of that sort of stuff. Frank had some issues with alcohol, and he did himself a stint recovering from those issues this spring, and now he is many, many months sober, and we are... out on the road trying to figure everything out. And I am not an addictive person. I'm a compulsive person. I'm a crazy person. But we're basking in the afterglow in a way of Frank's journey to sobriety. We're also just really excited by the fact that this is his first tour ever. He's pretty much losing his tour virginity right now. We're only on our 7th show, I believe,
mm-hmm.
tonight, of a 7-week-long tour. We're going to be out until almost December of this year. So, yeah, that and perhaps some other stories that will flesh themselves out later in the tour.
Alrighty then.
But yeah, Afterglow.
And this is a tour supporting your brand new album. And what's the name of that?
The album is called Fall on Your Sword.
And when did it come out?
Last Friday.
Right. So it is brand new.
Brand new.
But it's not really new to me. I remember it had to be at least 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were emailing back and forth about some random stuff. And you said to me, I distinctly remember... Hey man, I've got this album that I think you'll really like. It's an all-country thing. I know that's your style. So, you know, here are the really early mixes. Have a listen. And I remember I listened to it once, and like the entire time, my jaw was just sort of sitting on the floor. And I remember what I wrote you back was, number one, I love you.
Aww.
Number two...
Oh, yeah.
The reason, well, one of the many reasons why I love you is because you call this thing an all-country album. And
did
I listened
I call
to,
it that?
You did.
I don't think
and
I called it that. I am working on an all-country record as well.
Uh-huh. But no. That was the way you built it.
I hooked you in.
You
all
did.
All I had to do was real.
You did. But this is one of the things I love about your music in general, and unfortunately I didn't get the chance.
Yeah, trying to stick a label on it
is
not effective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a certain element of it where you can totally see sort of a country influence in it, mm-hmm. and sort of just the basic forms. But then what you do is you layer just so much more. And there are jazzy elements in it, there are bluesy elements in it, there are folky elements in it, there are any form of music that you could come up with, there is some bit of it somewhere from classical to rap that is involved in this album. And that's one of the things I think is great about what you do.
Yeah, we really literally went from opera to like contemporary hip hop in the span of, a couple of songs.
Yeah, and sometimes the same song. I mean, there are moments in your first listen to this album when you folks get the chance to listen to it where you'll be going through a song and you're like, I totally understand what's going on. And then suddenly, bam, it's like you just entered a whole new world. And I think that's one of the really cool things. I've listened to it dozens of times now and I'm still not even entirely sure what to expect. there's always something crazy going on. So can you... tell me,
mm-hmm.
What is your process like then for when you're writing these? Because obviously it starts out with a little gem of something you working on the guitar or whatever. And
right. And
then you build from there. I presume as you go into the studio, you build even more onto it. So what is it like for you when you're developing this?
I don't want this to sound as precious as it's going to sound, because it's not, trust me. No, it was a lot of trial and error. This whole album was started with drum loops. My drummer just came up, my drummer from Raise the Rent, actually, the older drummer, because I've been recording this album for over 2 years, so he was still very much in the picture because the country band was still winding down. But he and I got together, and I said, you know, I want a Bo Diddley beat, and I want, you know, something that starts in 5/4, and I want, you know, and I gave him kind of a list of things that I wanted to just try, and he made me 4-bar loops of a whole bunch of different beat cycles that I was then able to go in and just loop out infinitely in Logic, and just start to jam over, which is a completely different way from the way I usually write. I usually sit down with a guitar and at least one lyric or one hook idea in my head about what I want to sing about, what I want to tell people about. But they all, I mean, they're all love songs. They all end up being sort of personal, you know, diary songs, or I'm writing out of something like, you know, Make It Rain on Frost, for example, was written out of the idea of trying to do something that Phil Spector might have recorded, or, you know, things like that. What I wanted to do with this particular set of songs, starting with those drum beats, was to write something that was not about my own personal experience, was to go into narrative storytelling for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ended up with was I just spent a ton of time reading fables and fairy tales and American pop culture history and, you know, just digging into all of these really cool stories. And what ended up happening, what I ended up seeing myself drawn to in the narrative was these people that are going through struggles of identity or struggles of relationship or you know, whatever it was, they all figured out in some way what was wrong with them, what their flaw was. How were they not getting where they needed to be, or how did they end up dying, frankly, because they made the wrong decisions, things like that. And so that ended up being the overwhelming theme and why it became Fall on Your Sword.
Gotcha.
Because I would like to imagine that people will come away from this album having seen a bit of a cautionary tale. You know, these, you're not alone. These things happen to all of us. And here are some people that made some mistakes. And here are some people that figured it out. And you come away from this collection of stories, hopefully a little more worldly wise. The way that you would if you read Aesop's Fables
mm-hmm.
to your child,
mm-hmm.
you know, to sleep for a month every night, you know. You come away thinking, I remember hearing those songs or those stories as a kid. I do. I remember them. I'm not sure how they shaped me, but now that I read them again as an adult, holy crap, that's some brilliant stuff. Like, and now I have all these new applications for the same principles than I would have ever used at a previous point in my life. So that was what I was trying to do with the writing on this one.
Okay, so basically you're working as the philosopher
mm-hmm.
in that sense.
And speaking sort of, in the third person, finally.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, I mean, that definitely was a huge difference on this album because, I mean, especially your last two, Moxie and Frost, were just so personal.
Yeah.
And it was very obvious that, you know, virtually everything was taken straight out of your life. Even if you don't, the listener didn't
thinly
necessarily
veiled.
Know. Yeah, yeah. And this one, you definitely do stand much much further back, and you're
mm-hmm.
you're telling these stories. Which, like you said, a lot of this stuff came from your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But which of the ones that you use on the album were most impactful for you before you started the process? Which of these stories, you know, really had meaning for you as you were growing up or as you were, you know?
All of them did,
mm-hmm.
to varying degrees. I can't say that, you know, the Br'er Rabbit story is any less compelling than the Bonnie and Clyde story. Everybody wants to rob a bank and make love on the run and, you know, like, have that. People are fascinated by that story.
In fact,
story.
I think that's what we're doing as soon as you get off stage.
I know, right?
That's probably the plan.
But then there's also something extraordinarily appealing about the Br'er Rabbit story and the Tales of the South, like the sort of folk wisdom and getting out of a bind, you know,
mm-hmm.
the way of outsmarting your troubles is also a really compelling story. But I think if I had to pick one song that I think really said what I wanted to say, like really nailed it, was Bees Made Honey in the Lion's Head,
mm-hmm.
which is the Samson and Delilah song.
And my personal favorite,
one,
I have to say.
Okay. That's the one with the rap part in it. The
mm-hmm.
verse that Swavsky sings, he and I developed his verse together He had lots of ideas about what he wanted to say with it. And then we sat down and we reread the Bible story together. And we came up with the last of it. But that song is a weird amalgamation of references to old-time music and old country blues. Reverend Gary Davis, if I had my way, I'd tear this building down. You know, I stole that line outright. And, of course, it's still compelling. It's wonderful. I mean, who doesn't feel that way sometimes?
Right.
But then to go into Hear Jerusalem Moan was a way of me modernizing the concept of what happened with Samson and Delilah. If you go back and you actually read that Bible story, they were tit for tat. One person would do one shitty thing to the other person, then the other person would retaliate, and then they would retaliate back, and it would just escalate from there. And then you look at Jerusalem and Palestine, and it's kind of the same thing. One person does a shitty thing, and the next person does a shittier thing, and, you know, it just gets worse and worse. And so what I wanted to make happen with that song was, like, realizing that the minute you start that fight, it's going to be really, really hard to undo that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take that principle into every relationship in your life, whether it's work or romantic or anything at all. You know, you can take that principle into anything.
I've got you. Well, going from the story on that song, you just kind of ran through several of the different types of music that you were looking at in that. I think that is the perfect example of what we were talking about how when you're listening to it, you really have no idea where this song is going.
Mm-hmm.
Because it starts out as a fairly conventional sort of indie rock sound, I think. And then it breaks into the rap part. And then suddenly it becomes this, like, glory, hallelujah, gospel
number.
Taking everybody
to church, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and by the time, like, that's when it really hit me. Like, when you get to the, can you hear Jerusalem moan repeated, you know, and it just grabs you. And that's, you know, that's when I had my heart in this album. So it was really great that you started off that way, because it really, I think for a listener, gives you everything you need to know about what's coming up on the rest of the album, because it is just everything rolled into one, and it's so cool.
I'm glad that you've said that, because deciding what order the songs go in on a record is the worst. It's so hard to know what to put first and, you know, what to put where on a record, and to tell the story of the album is so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm glad
that
you think that it set up the record.
Well, I do.
Cool.
I mean, and there are a number of others that you know, could have done the same thing. But like I said, that's been my first personal favorite anyway since I first listened to it. So that makes it even better for me.
Cool.
But can you sort of explain then, how did you decide that a rap verse is going to go with a
Amy Winehouse?
Okay.
Amy Winehouse collaborated with Ghostface Killah on that album, and I thought it was so cool. I it was too cool to not try my hand at something like that myself. Obviously, it's going to be in my style.
Right.
I'm not going to just imitate what they did, but can you take, like, a funky, you know, narrative song and add a hip hop verse? Hell yeah, you can, and you can do it in a pretty classy, fun way.
Mm-hmm.
And she nailed it. And I love her. And I wanted to do that.
Okay.
It's definitely an homage to her by my, you know, choosing to put that in there.
Fair enough.
And I've gotten a lot of flack for it. A lot of my old folkier friends, if you will, people that are more oriented to the Reverend Gary Davis side of the song,
right,
are like, man, we really wish you hadn't put that in there. So maybe I'll do a cut version at some point. But
well, I mean, It's kind of weird to me, because in a lot of ways I am more traditional. I'm a little bit on that side, and you know, I'm the kind of guy who will put on a Woody Guthrie record or a Lead Belly record and just, you know, do that for a week and never come out of it. But at the same time, as far as modern music goes, I've always liked where things come together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a big fan of classic country necessarily, which, you know, a lot of my friends would hit me over the head for, but you know, I find most George Jones songs or whatever kind of boring, honestly.
Some of them are downright corny.
Yeah. Well, especially that era, you know, the whole Rhinestone Cowboy. Right.
They're definitely corny.
But you take that and you throw them together with some rock, and you get the Bottle Rockets or the old 97s or whatever. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love alt country, because it's taking two things that really don't belong together and making them belong together so perfectly. And I think that's one of the things that you're a master at, honestly, is coming up with ways to infuse these things with new ideas and new styles that really maybe shouldn't be together, but it turns out, yeah, they should.
Well, I got to tell you, there's no shortage of music in the world. There's so much of it that everyone is just so overwhelmed all the time. And if you want a mood record, you want something that sounds the same all the way through, go get the War on Drugs record. It's awesome.
Okay.
It has the same guitar sound, and it's brilliant, and it's wonderful. And if you just want to listen to something that gives you that feeling for 45 minutes,
right.
Yeah, go get a wonderful record like that that just has that mood. I don't want to do what everyone else has already done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tom Waits is kind of my spirit guide in that sense. If you put Tom Waits in
and
your
in other
iTunes,
senses,
yeah, if you put Tom Waits in your iTunes, you know, like you look at the genres that people
right.
have filed his album under, there's all the genres you could think of are listed under there.
Mm-hmm.
You just might as well make a genre called Tom Waits because it's so unique and everything is him no matter what he tries his hand at. I'm still a baby band. This is only my fourth record, and none of my records have hit the big national scene. So, in a lot of ways, I don't know if people will recognize that I'm doing something out of the box the way that he did
right.
for a long time yet. And I don't really care. I mean, we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm having fun, and that's all that matters. I am definitely making the art I want to make.
Right.
And not compromising just because it will be more popular if I do.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think...
that's fake. I don't want to do that.
No. Yeah, I totally get you. You mentioned before the Brer Rabbit story,
mm-hmm.
Which is used in, what's the name of that?
The Tales of the South.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm really bad with titles. That line speaks to me so much too, just because I know you a little bit, and just that idea of when you're saying, you know, please, whatever you do,
don't
throw me
into the fire.
Exactly.
Bush, yeah.
And it seems to me that that's exactly like where you're at home. It makes so much sense. It's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you want to be in the place nobody else wants to be. You want to
mm-hmm.
do your thing and have it be your thing. And so that's why
absolutely.
That made sense to me.
And that one is in a tongue-in-cheek way, along with the song, what did I call it on the record? A Maturity of Proof.
Right.
All of the songs on this record have joke titles as well. So like Bees Made Honey on the Lion's Head,
mm-hmm.
the joke title is Giggle Stick. And so if you look at our set lists on stage, it'll say Giggle Stick, not Bees. It's kind of funny. I still get them confused.
Right.
Just because when I was writing them, I didn't know what they were going to be about. And I had to set up a logic file, so I gave them a joke name that would be hilarious to open up every time I opened it. So.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so that song, the Brer Rabbit song, and the Maturity of Proof are both slightly tongue-in-cheek, you know, I'm a woman in a man's industry. I'm doing something that's inventive and creative and weird in an industry that really prefers this sort of singular sound, you know? So in a way, both of those songs are me flipping the bird to the rest of the community that has decided
right.
That they've categorized me.
Right.
That they've decided where I sit in the grand scheme of things. And it's like, no, you know what? Screw you guys.
Right. And that's sort of getting back to what we were talking to about at the very beginning. That's one of the weird things about what I do. Because in order to talk about somebody who other people may not have heard, you have to be able to categorize them and reference them. This person sounds like this person is an easy way to get into somebody's head and immediately, you know, key them in. But it's also the laziest way.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter what you're talking about, even if two bands are very similar, they do have their own distinctive things going on. And that's another reason that, you know, again, I really like this album was because it is. It's completely unclassifiable. It's like you were saying with Tom Waits. Like at the bottom of it where on my review I have a list of categories that the music falls into. You know, that thing's going to be never ending because from song to song, from moment
yeah.
to moment to whatever, it incorporates so much.
I've had people call me cabaret pop. I've had people call me torch folk. I like that one, torch folk. Charleston City Paper called me that. Yeah, it's all kinds of people love labels. I don't know why.
Well, it does make things simple.
Ever nichifying world.
Right, right. Well, and it also gets back to something that we were talking about before as far as marketing music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to be able to stick this record in a bin or, you know, so that they
can
sell it.
And I own a record store. Believe me,
right.
I know. I would love to know what an album is so it's easier for me to sell or easier for me to, you know, to file.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I would still rather have better music regardless of what tab is sticking up above the record in the bin, you know?
Indeed, indeed. I totally get you. And I think, again, that's one of the unique things that you do that sets you apart. One of the other unique things that I do want to talk about a little bit is you do...
You guys listening to this can't see the glint in his eye right now, so I'm guessing this is going to be good.
Well, it is going to be good from my perspective, at least. No, one of the cool things about you, as opposed to a lot of other artists who are sort of on your same level... is that you do nationally tour.
Yes.
And we were just talking a little bit about how hard that is when you're going into new places or going into cities where you've only played once or twice or whatever and
right.
making it work. Can you tell me why that's so important to you first and why you want to put so many miles in the car when you're, you know, really just starting out, like you said?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not just starting out. To be fair, I've been
yeah.
singing since I was 8 and I'm 35 now.
Right.
This is my 4th full-length album, and I have been touring full-time for 3 years. Honestly, I love traveling. I haven't ever experienced anything that I have liked as much as going out into cities like this and meeting people like you. Like, this is... I live for this. When I'm at home drinking gin and sitting in front of my computer looking at Facebook, being bummed out at the state of the world... That thing that gets me through is, oh man, I get to go out and be in that world, and I get to see the people who aren't making headlines, and I get to talk to my friends, I get to sing songs with people I care about. That is huge. That is like soul feeding stuff. And it doesn't matter if I make a ton of money. And of course, like it should, every time I come back to a city, I make more friends. And
right.
it gets a little bit better and a little bit bigger. And, you know, maybe a venue that I wasn't able to get into before will book me and I'll be able to play to their crowd. And so all of that stuff is a gentle, organic build. And that's totally fine with me. I'm process driven. We all know that, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need an end product. I really like the process. But, I mean, when I was 18 years old, I moved to New York City, and I got involved with Pete Seeger's Clearwater program.
Mm-hmm.
I went sailing for 3 years. I dropped off the grid and taught environmental science on traditional wooden sailing ships, singing sea shanties and stuff. Like, I love moving around the world.
Right.
I just love it. And music is just a natural extension of that.
Indeed.
Yeah, tour.
Well, it's getting a little loud in the other room now because they're about to start. Do you want to just jump back there real quick?
Sure.
Let's just do that.
Okay.
So anyway, we'll talk while we're moving.
Okay.
Now we get to the reason that there was a glint in my eye. Because, well, this is not going to be an uh-oh. But there we go. She's a much smarter woman than I. She found a place to put this. Because I want to talk about one of the shows that you got coming up, because
okay.
it is really ridiculously cool. We were just talking earlier about one of my favorite places in the world,
mm-hmm.
Where I'm hoping to take that van that you were just
mm-hmm.
checking out, my stately manor, very soon. And you're actually playing a show out there. Excuse
hey.
Us.
How are you?
Good, sorry. And you're actually going out to the Joshua Tree Motel and
yeah,
playing
yeah.
from your mate. So how did that come about, and why
All right.
do you want to do that?
Okay, so there's a miraculous unicorn fairy human.
Besides me?
named Joe Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Warren, Rhode Island, which is about 40 minutes from where I live in New London, Connecticut. And he was a staple of our scene for a very long time up in New England. And he recently moved down to Nashville, but he has been slogging it out as a touring songwriter now for several years. has made a bunch of wonderful records, and this last one finally got some serious notoriety, which is long overdue. But he's just, he's a miraculous human. He's a bringer together of people. And everything he touches, it just, it's so cool. I actually borrowed a lyric of his for the song Love is a Rebellious Bird on the new record. The All I Could Give to You Was Bourbon and a Place to Lay Your Head is a reference to an old Joe Fletcher song. And he graciously granted me permission to use that line. And he's amazing. But like so many touring bands that come through New England and crash at my house and do their laundry and check their email and stuff when they're on tour, he came by this summer on his way to or from Newport Folk Fest, one direction or the other, to do some laundry. And we got to talking about this tour and where I was going, and he's like, you have to stop in Joshua Tree. You don't even understand, because I couldn't, you know, I was trying to route it. I'm trying to figure out how to make money and where to stay. And so he gave me a number of pointers along the way for the whole tour, but he's, you really have to book a roommate. You have to stay there. And he pulled his keys out of his pocket, and he had a roommate tag on his keychain. And I was like, if it's that meaningful to you, and you are the kind of person that I respect and love so much, you know, I have to do this. So I went back and did, you know, even more homework on Graham Parsons than I had already done. And I was like, yes, we're gonna do this. I got online, I whipped my credit card out, and I booked the room. And yeah, we're going to sit there, we're going to do a concert window live stream from that room.
Indeed.
It's going to be so cool.
Right.
That's another afterglow story that I can't reveal yet.
I see.
So that's part of the reason
for
the
tour name. So I'm guessing it will be revealed on concert window then.
I might be on psychedelics
yeah,
for the
well,
first time in my life when that happens. May or may not.
Believe me, Joshua Tree is the place to be if you're going to be going for that. Yeah, you don't even want to get into some of my stories at that place. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, God, don't publish this before, because now I'll have the cops knocking on the door.
Dude, I think they know what's going on in roommate at the Joshua Tree Motel. I think pretty much any night of the week, I think you can figure something is going on there.
I'm also just really excited to stay in that space. He's such an incredible songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like it's a bit of a rite of passage to just be in that space.
Right. And I've never actually stayed there, because I am ridiculously cheap, and I always stay in the park itself. But one of these days, I want to make that happen myself. So,
it's pretty cheap. I think I was only like $100, $109.
Yeah,
for
I think that's exactly what it is, in
so
fact.
Cheap.
Yeah. In fact, the New York Times just had a great story. I don't know if you saw that.
Somebody sent me a link about it.
Yeah, you should check that out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it is, like, there's the whole thing behind his death and all that is so amazing.
And then how his corpse got stolen.
Yeah,
and
I met Bill Kaufman, who is a great guy, and I love the way that he tells that story. And it's so much different than the movie or anything else when you're hearing it straight from him. And he is such a wonderful guy, and he's just so damn cool.
People have compared me to Emmylou Harris my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been like the girl singer that accompanies all the boys, you know, and it's I think that's fun, and so it's meaningful on that level to me as well.
Okay. Except this time it's the other way around. You're the girl in charge, and you're being accompanied by...
I suppose so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Girl power, take it back, you know?
Right?
You know?
That's what we're talking about.
Indeed. So just to make sure, because this will come out beforehand, so we'll try and keep the cops away, but, it's a great opportunity for people who maybe don't get to catch you on the road to actually see you, because it will be on Concert Window.
Exactly.
And you've done one Concert Window show before, correct?
Yeah, we did it with the full band, which I think was a little too much for Concert Window to handle. It was a little tough to mix that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this one literally will be like, the laptop will sit on the end of the bed, and Frank and I will sit with our acoustic guitars, and we will sing into the laptop.
There you go.
The good humans of Earth. From the room 8 at the Joshua Tree Inn.
And quite possibly the aliens who are circling Earth, because it's a worldwide broadcast, man. They can get our Wi-Fi.
Yay, satellites.
just for people who are listening who may want to tune in, when exactly is that going to be?
Oh, gosh. I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah,
it's,
you did.
Early November. I think it's November 9th. Hang on one second.
Okay.
I will know that for sure.
I should know this, too, but I'm woefully underprepared for this interview, as usual.
Woefully underprepared or not, everything is on DaphneLeeMartin.com.
Yes.
No matter what, where, when, how... And now my phone is acting up. I think it's November 9th.
Okay.
But if you go to DaphneLeeMartin.com, there is a link on the show's page.
That sounds about right to me, too.
Right to where you need to be.
And you also have a Facebook event for it, so if people go to Daphne Lee Martin on Facebook and look it up that way, you can check it out. But I do have to highly recommend that to everybody, because Daphne is a lot of fun, and I think that is going to be a great little venue for a great little show. And you know,
and it's free just to listen, but you are also welcome to tip if you want to, which is fun. And by that point in the tour, we probably will have blown through all of our money. So.
Yes, indeed. And it's $109 they're putting out just for that show. So everybody throw it a little bit into the hat at least, right?
Help us buy drugs.
Yeah, there you go. So once again, highly recommend that. And do have to highly recommend Follow Your Sword, the new album.
Thank you.
It is a lot of fun. And like I say, I never know what to make of anything that Daphne sends me, and this was such a pleasant surprise. It's been so much fun to listen to this album over and over again, and you come up with something different every single time you listen to it. And I have been playing it nonstop for a couple of months now, and literally every single time I go through it, I discover something new. So once again, Follow Your Sword is the new album. You can check DaphneLeeMartin.com, get all the info on that. It's also on iTunes and Amazon and everything, correct?
All those places, yeah.
Indeed. And she is touring nationwide. So no matter where you are, check out the webpage and see if she's coming close to you, and you'll have a lot of fun. So
I can promise you that.
Yes, indeed. Now, there's a reason, even though you haven't been able to make it to Cleveland, that I always drive down to see you, because there's never been one of your shows that I haven't enjoyed. So
thank you.
Indeed. And it's always great to see you, and it's always great to get the chance to sit down. This is the second time you've joined us for an interview, so we'll look forward to seeing you again soon. For now, I think we got some music going on in the other room, so why don't we go check that out?
Right on.
All
thanks,
right.
Diesel, you're
yeah.
the best.
Yeah, I know I am. But once again, this has been No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. Thank you again to Daphne Lee Martin for joining us. We're going to go check out some music. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. All righty then.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.